G'day, Dominic Barfield here, and this is the RVC Clinical Podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you for subscribing on your smartphone or generic fruit-based device. Really grateful for you taking the time to download and listen to this RVC podcast. You do not ask for much in return, but incredibly grateful if you could pop to Apple Podcasts or Acast or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. Obviously, a five-star review would be great. We'd really appreciate a couple of moments of your time to do that. Joining Brian and myself in the studio, we're going to talk to Nicola Ho. Welcome, Nicola. Nicola is one of our veterinary anaesthetists and one of our lecturers in the veterinary anaesthesia and analgesia team. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
So really what we want to talk about is, you were involved, or one of the lead author of a paper looking at sleep fatigue and mental health in the veterinary anaesthesia. And you asked a questionnaire to a lot of anaesthetists in different roles in the anaesthesia team. And I suppose it's very interesting. So I thought I'd ask you to come on the pod and sort of talk about it. So can I ask, like, why did you want to have a look at this in the first place?
Well, as most decisions that are good come after a very long night shift, I think I wanted to look at sleep, and I wanted to know whether my experiences were universal. So I started out trying to look at sleep initially, and then I realised it was not something I could look at by itself. So then I expanded the scope of it to include things like burnout, fatigue, and also depressive symptoms, and I went from there.
And so when you're looking at this, so you sent a questionnaire to a couple of listservs, and you were telling before the pod you actually got quite a high percentage of feedback, so about 30% or something.
Yeah, about 30%
of the listserv. So obviously things expanded. So you wanted to look at sleep, but then so why did you include like fatigue and other things in your questionnaire?
Yeah, so I decided to include it all because I found that sleep is linked to so many things. So if you look at the sort of previous literature, you find that sleep is associated with many. So poor sleeping in particular is associated with sort of high risk of burnout and depressive symptoms. So I wanted to bring it all together and see whether that applied to our population too.
Okay. So what did you ask? So what questions were in your survey about mm-hmm. sleep? And
so I used a couple of validated sort of metrics. So the one that I used to look at sleep was the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index. And then the respondents had to score their sleep symptoms. And then from that, we could determine whether they were classed as poor sleepers or not. We did also look at the fatigue severity scale to sort of classify fatigue. And then what we did from the sort of the scores that we had was to classify into no fatigue, borderline fatigue, or high fatigue. We did also have one question asking about burnout, where people could sort of pick the option that best correlated to the symptoms that they were finding. And then I did also include the patient health questionnaire 9 to look at depressive symptoms.
And when you asked this, did you ask for people to think about it in relation to how they felt right now at the moment? Or did you say sort of like looking back in the past week or month? Or
yeah, so it depends on the metric, but it was either sort of within the past few weeks or the month or within the past month.
And obviously, so anaesthetists are on call, veterinary anaesthetists, no different, but I suppose lots of the profession is on call. I suppose
yes,
there's some
exactly.
elements of shift work as well, isn't
yes.
there, in the profession. So you looked at anaesthetists, because obviously that's what you're
yes,
doing
exactly.
at the moment. But was there any is there any literature about this in the veterinary context at all?
Not particularly in terms of across the sort of range of those practicing in veterinary anaesthesia, in the sense that my survey covered those sort of technicians, nurses, interns, residents in training, those who had finished residency training, and also diplomats. There are other papers out there looking at residents in training in particular for veterinary anaesthesia, which also had some sort of illuminating content. And then I think previously similar things have been studied in veterinary students as well. I think there was a recent paper on veterinary technicians where it pretty much said that they had high levels of burnout as well.
Okay, and also I suppose that the timing of the study. So when did you ask this questionnaire?
Yeah. So my questionnaire went out in October 2021, and I had it open for about 3 months. And I think if we look at the timings of that, that's probably at the sort of tail end of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Good. And so what things did you find?
Things that I find. I found that about 70% could be considered sort of poor sleepers, and that on the whole, that sort of sleep quality wasn't very good compared to the general population. I did also find that in terms of burnouts, I think there are about 40% who consider themselves not burned out, but there was a much higher proportion if you look at sort of which populations within the population that we surveyed were burned out, that veterinary technicians and nurses suffered higher levels of burnout than the other populations.
Okay. And with the CDC, you said about the control. So is there a standard sort of what is normal sleep? Is that what you used, or was there a control?
There wasn't a control group, no. So I was comparing to what the sort of general statistics are from general populations.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what else did you find?
What else did we find?
Yeah.
We found that levels of fatigue were also quite high, and that those in, so we surveyed across sort of internationally really, but because it was an English language survey, the majority of the responses come from English speaking countries. So we had about 25% of the responses from the UK, and then about 30% from North America, and the sort of other 30% from Europe, and then the rest were from all over the world, but very much sort of lower numbers there.
And but you also about patient safety and so like errors or things.
Oh, yes.
that had happened in that time. So you're not only saying like, are you tired and affected, but the I suppose self describing any errors, near misses, mm-hmm. any patient safety incidents.
Yeah.
So was that quite, did you get quite a lot of responses about that?
Yes, I did actually. So I did also ask about how people were commuting to work and their methods of transport. And then I asked about whether sort of fatigue had affected people making mistakes in their work, but also whether fatigue had affected their driving and whether they had had sort of adverse consequences as a sort of as a consequence of driving while fatigued. And we found that the levels of that were very high. I think about 40% of those who sort of had to drive reported near misses, and then a sort of smaller number reporting sort of major or minor incidents as a consequence. In terms of people who admitted to making mistakes while fatigued, that was about 75%. And then I also asked about whether people had fallen asleep at work or napped or microslept, and that was about 30% that self-reported that. And then I asked if they'd seen other people falling asleep or napping or microsleeping at work, and that was about 60%. So whether we've got a lot of people in the same place reporting the same person falling asleep, that I don't know. But I feel like probably there are more people who are doing it than would admit to it.
Nicola, do we have any idea about, say, similar groups of anaesthetists in human terms? Do they report similar findings, or has this been looked at in people as well?
So it has been looked at in human anaesthetists, as it were, and I think our figures are fairly similar for those sort of suffering fatigue.
And was there any theme, so in either what you've read before, what you sort of found out about, like why is sleep so affected in general?
I think if I look at the sort of patient safety or work safety studies, especially for things like factory workers, they find that, you know, lack of sleep is going to correlate with sort of cognitive dysfunction and immune function as well. So I think sleep is so much more important than we consider it, I think, most of the time. So I think that's that was why I think it was a good starting point.
Okay. And do you think, are there things that you think you can put in place either individually or at a workplace to try and help that? Or some of the things that with sleep, not necessarily to do with the work, it's whatever lifestyle choices or things going on at home.
Yeah, so I think in terms of working hours, I think the European directive to some extent is a bit helpful, because if you look at the working hours between the sort of continents, we know that on average the North Americans are going to work, well, for us, they had the largest proportion working in excess of 60 hours per week. But then when you look into the figures that we had, Even with the European directive, we found a lot of the time it wasn't really being followed. So I think probably we should take our sort of direction from other sort of safety metrics that are used in other industries, where, you know, working hours can be quite irregular or long. So things like aviation in particular, they have safety checklists, and even things like haulage and transportation.
So do you think there are things that you can implement, or indeed in your own team, are there things that have been implemented following on from your study?
Nothing quite as yet. I think there is a checklist that we can go through for people to check in on themselves and also to check each other. In terms of fatigue, and I think we are probably more aware of this now than we were in previous years, in terms of the working hours that especially think people like residents are working. So I think there is improvement to be made, and I think we have ways to do it. We just need to make sure we can try and implement some of these things.
So what do you think people should implement, or what do you think are good initiatives, or is there any evidence about like that having a positive, you know, something you can put in place that might have a positive outcome?
Yeah, so I think in a lot of medical trainees, their working time is audited, and if they exceed a certain number of hours, that has to be explained. So I think that would be a good thing to implement. There are also sort of self checklists. So I think there was one called HALT, where it's like hungry, angry, late or tired. Then you need to think about whether you are fit to work, essentially. I mean, we haven't got to the point where we breathalyze people before they start a shift, and hopefully we don't need to get to that point. But I think part of it comes from individual responsibility, but also responsibility at a more organisational level.
And do you think that obviously this is not saying that organisations are asking for this, but do you think sometimes when you have a lot of highly motivated people that want to achieve something, that they don't consider that as something that they need to do, as in they want to be there, they want to work? Is that, were some people saying, well, I do this, but I almost enjoy it.
Willingly.
Willingly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it is challenging because it's very hard to see these things from within yourself. I think it's much easier for other people to observe you and notice these things than it is for you to sort of notice that maybe you are starting to become quite burned out. Maybe your mood is not what it was. So I think we do need to look after each other, really, when it comes to these things.
And so if you were going to, I suppose, like two questions. So if, what questions do you think you would have liked to ask in the survey that you didn't, or groups of mm-hmm. individuals? And if you were going to do it again, what would you include? And also, do you think it'd be different?
Yeah. So I think I would like to know how the responses would have changed if we give a few more years from the sort of impacts of the pandemic. I think I would also quite like to survey other specialities, and also more broadly, because this is only really those in who have decided to go into sort of specialist training most of the time, or have specialised in certain areas. Whereas, you know, there are many other specialities, and there are many of those who are working in sort of other types of practice as well that we haven't really looked at.
Yeah, but as we were saying as well, like before, though you've looked at a cohort of veterinary anaesthetists in training or specialists, in reality, so many of the veterinary profession do on call or after hours work, then that I suppose it's applies to all.
Exactly.
And do you think, so I suppose, is it hard to tell whether some of the feedback from the questionnaire was related to the COVID pandemic? I suppose, is that difficult to
it's hard to pick apart, unfortunately. And unless we rerun it, then I'm not sure we will ever know exactly how much the pandemic plays into the responses that we had. I think it was just slightly unfortunate timing in some ways.
And with the patient safety sort of mm-hmm. side of it, this is like self-reported. Which is interesting as well. I imagine people are probably more likely to err on the side of caution in this survey, but whether that underrepresented the amount
exactly. I think it's, I mean, it was done anonymously with the intention that people be as honest as possible. But that's not to say there aren't going to be biases present in the sort of people that are deciding to respond to the survey as well. So I think it, it can work both ways, I suppose.
And so within your team, you said you haven't necessarily made any changes of yet from
this no, but then I think over the sort of past few years, the residency that I went through now looks very different to the residency that others are experiencing currently, and I think many of the changes that we have made have been for the better.
Can I ask just what those are?
So I think the pandemic really accelerated hybrid working for many people. So when I was coming through, when we had sort of teaching sessions in the morning, they were all in person. There was no option. So you either missed it if you were too tired, or you made your way back in after having been up all night for an encore and then coming back to do that. So I think it allows people more freedom to decide whether they are actually safe to be commuting. And also enables, if someone has sort of had a very long night, it enables them to catch up on teaching later without the worry of missing something and having to try and catch that up.
As in it's recorded?
It's recorded, yeah.
And how is that received by the teachers, I suppose, and the receivers?
There are drawbacks to it as well, I suppose, because I think it's very easy to participate less if you're doing something remotely versus being all in person. So I think we run things hybrid, so for those that are sort of fit to attend, they'll attend the sessions in person, and for those that aren't, then it's less of a worry.
Is there anything else that you've instigated?
Anything else we've instigated?
Or changed, sorry.
Or changed since? No, I think we have looked at sort of changing how we do shifts. I think before I started the residency, the way that Encore was implemented was quite different. So that had changed by the time I started, and that's a change that's been kept. So it used to be that you could be working for the entire day and then also all night if you're unlucky enough. Now it seems to be that we have people who are on nights, so they have a night shift, as it were, but they are on call, so they can, if there is nothing happening, they're allowed to go away and come back as needed.
So it's more of a shift than rather just being on, sort of like a shift work.
but basically,
a shift work. And is that well received within the team? Because I suppose it might be that they are sort of more days are taken up with this overall, if that makes sense.
So I think it is generally quite well received. It means that if your night shifts have been kind to you, you have got the opportunity to do some work during the day if you feel inclined. But equally, if you have had a bad night shift, then you're able to try and sleep a bit. So I think it is good.
And have you got any feedback from not your team, but necessarily like the anaesthesia community about your study?
Not particularly. I think I did have some sort of free entry. I did have a free entry question at the end of the survey, and I did have about 80 responses, a lot of them referencing burnout, but also some positive things. So some people mentioned that they really loved their jobs, actually. And some of them mentioned that, you know, sometimes what they needed was to change their job into still working in the profession, but a different location, as it were.
Fair enough. That makes a bit of a difference. Do you think there's anything that we haven't sort of discussed that you would like to sort of bring up about your paper?
I think the lesson from it is that we all really need to look out for each other. I think that is the important thing. But also I think in order to be able to look out for someone, you need to really get to know your colleagues. So I think we are social animals. We should try and encourage that. And that way we can best look after each other.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Nicola, for your time today. And thank you for listening. So we'll wrap it up there. So don't forget to subscribe. You can hit the your generic fruit-based device subscribe button, and that way you don't even have to worry about missing a podcast. So if you could leave us a 5-star review, that would be great, on Apple Podcast or Acast, wherever you get your reviews, wherever you get your podcasts rather than reviews. Don't forget to tell your friends, vet friends, anybody. That'd be great. And we'll place some show notes. We'll place a link to Nicola's paper in the on the RVC pages. So if you just type in RVC Clinical Podcast into your search engine of choice, it should be top of the tree. So if you have any comments or suggestions for this podcast, you can get in touch. You can either email podcast@rvc.ac.uk or follow us or message us on Instagram at RVC Clinical Podcast. Until next time, bye-bye.